My name is Chris Watnick, alcoholic. Thank you, Christina and Scott, for having us. Great job, Rory. Welcome to the new couple guys. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad that you're here. And I'm a little nervous, man. My sponsor was telling me the other day, he's like, you know, in chapter 5, where it says, some of us suffered from grave emotional and mental disorders, but we recover if we have the capacity to be honest. He was like, I want you to start raising your hand at that part of the reading. So just know, like, as we progress through the next few minutes, that's what you're dealing with. Grave emotional and mental disorders. I'm super grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be here and to be sober tonight, to be part of Alcoholics Anonymous, and not just part of, but an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I do have a home group. It's the Vicious Cycle Men's Big Book Study on Tuesday nights in Ventura. I have a sponsor, Dan G., and my sobriety date is September 22nd, 2006. I was thinking about this, and I was telling Christina earlier, like, a friend of mine had mentioned to me a couple months ago, not to me, but we were talking, and she was saying, yeah, the longer you get sober, you know, when you get an opportunity to share your story, like, usually what happens is, like, how you ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous starts to shrink, and you tell more about, like, what it's been like since you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been thinking about that. You know, I've been here for 19 years now, and there's so much to life, you know. So if you're new, or if in your first couple of weeks or your first year, just stay here. There's so much that happens in our lives in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to do my best to share, you know, my experience, strength, and hope with you guys. I'm going to for sure plagiarize from other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you hear something, you're like, dude, I heard this speaker from L.A. say that. You did hear the speaker from L.A. say that. But that's how we communicate, right? That's how I get fed through you guys from God. That's how I get some of the food that I need. You guys see me in a way that I don't see myself. I did hear that, so we'll just start off with some plagiarism. I heard this guy up in Santa Barbara a few years ago, probably 7 or 8 years ago, and he said, I have an uncanny ability to spot other people's problems and be, like, really accurate and to be able to offer them a realistic solution. And he goes, but I have a blind spot to myself. And that's, like, my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I'm pretty darn good with spotting what's going on with you and being like, dude, this is what you need to do. Bop, 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 bop. Let's meet together. We'll do this. We'll do that. You should be cleared up in a couple of weeks. You're just going to have to keep working on it. And meanwhile, I'm like, I do not understand why this relationship is not working out. What is wrong with her? It's me. I'm the problem. I'm always the problem. You're the problem too, but you need to look at it from your side. Yeah. It is good to be here, and it is good to be sober on this, what is it, November 23rd, 2025? I haven't gotten this day before, and we're not going to get it again. This is it. This is the only November 23rd, 2025 we get. I'm glad to be here. I grew up in Northern California, pretty good home. I have a little sister. My folks were together. From that, looking at it and even like looking back on it, it's a pretty healthy family life. Church on Sundays, we weren't like Bible thumpers or anything, but that was just like what we did. Like if you live in this house, you go to church on Sundays and, go to school, play sports. And I had from a pretty early age this concept of God, right? So I grew up in a Christian home. We said grace together. We sat down together as a family and ate dinner. The TV got turned off. There was no radio on. Dinner was together as a family every night. Which is, it's kind of cool. I look back on that now and I'm like, man, I don't see that a whole lot anymore. I don't know if it was cool or not, whatever. It just is what it was. But my little sister is this stellar human being. She's like the epitome of, when I look at like people, I'm like, dude, she is honest and kind and knows how and when to put her foot down. She's raised three amazing kids. She's been married for 30 years. She's a great daughter to our folks. Walked my mom through the death of our dad and was there with him. And she, like, I was talking to her on the phone a couple years ago. Dude, first of all, it's super hard to grow up in a, like, when you're a pre-alcoholic and you have that as your sibling. Dude, that's rough. But I was talking to her a couple years ago and she was like, yeah, I got really mad at someone at work. And then after a couple hours, I was just like looking at myself. And she's telling me this over the phone. She's like, and I saw where I was wrong. And so I went to that person and I was like, oh, I was wrong. How can I make it right? And I was like, where did you learn that? And she's like, that's just what you do, dude. And I was like, I didn't come stock like that. Anyhow, we grew up in Northern California. My dad was a career federal employee. My mom was a stay-at-home mom until she wasn't. And we had a pretty good family life. However, I had a really difficult time sitting still. Whether it was at the dinner table, whether it was in class, at school, I had a really tough time with that. And I started getting a lot of trouble behind that. Like, you need to go sit in the hallway. What the hell is wrong with you? So my dad, doing the best that he could, I believe, with the set of tools that he had, would ask, like, son, what is wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And the message that I was getting is that I'm flawed. There's something wrong with me. No, that's not on my dad. Like, I used that for a long time. It's him. He's the problem. I'm the way that I am is because of him. My mom was there, but not there. It's her problem. Maybe that's legit when you're like six, but when you're 36, that's that saying, right? I'm sorry your folks left you standing in the rain when you're six. But you're standing in the rain and you're 36 years old, dude. You need to get out of the rain. You're responsible for that. This is on me. So I started at a pretty early age developing this resentment towards my old man. I never felt like I measured up. I felt like my sister was the better one. And I couldn't get love from him. And so what I did is I started to seek that out in my buddies in the neighborhood, just my school friends. And what I discovered was this belief system that served me for decades was if I can do something to impress you that I think that you think is cool, you'll like me and then I'm good. And that dominated my life. That was the belief system by which I lived. Which isn't that bad when it's skateboard tricks and BMX bikes. But as my life progressed, those decisions degressed and the behaviors that I was involved in became more and more questionable, illegal, and immoral. And so what I think you think of me has dominated me for decades. Surprisingly, it hasn't dominated me tonight that much, but it can in a heartbeat. Like if I say something that I think is funny and you guys don't laugh, I will like in my mind be like, oh man, they don't like me. Shoot, dude. Rory, get the truck running. My keys are right there. That has dominated me, and that's a big part of my story. Because the more that I listen to that internal chatter, that internal conversation, the less present I am right here, right now with you guys, the more I distance myself from the sunlight of the Spirit, from being present with God. I can't even hear what you're saying. I certainly can't hear from a greater power. And I'm absorbed with self-centeredness and fear. And it'll drive my life. When I was probably, I think I was in junior high, I was in junior high. And after, you know, some years of sobriety and some step work, I've stumbled across this memory of standing out in front of the lockers before school started. And, you guys invited me up here to the other place like a couple years ago. So if you have heard this, sucks for you. Whatever. I was in junior high standing out in front of the school talking to like four or five of my buddies before school started, seventh or eighth grade. And I remember, this is years later, I remembered this. I had this moment where I remembered, had this memory, standing there with my pals in front of school talking. And there was a conversation going on, and I remember thinking, how am I standing right now? Should I have both hands in my pockets or one hand in my pocket? Are these jeans okay? This was like the late 80s, so like we were wearing Levi jackets with the collars flipped up. Like, is my Levi jacket cool? Am I cool? Is what I'm saying cool enough to be part of what I'm saying? Do they think what I'm thinking is like just wrapped up in a knot? I didn't know that that was even going on. And that internal dialogue drove me. That was my driver. I believed that voice. Whatever I thought you thought was what dictated my behavior and my choices. So I was committed to impressing you no matter what, because I would get that sense of belonging, approval. Underneath it all is just love. I wanted to feel love. Who know? I mean, I didn't know that at 13 or 14 years old, but that was what was driving me. So we moved from Northern California to Southern California. I had lived in the same house on the same street my whole entire life. So now I'm really like, I am justified to be ticked off at my parents, especially my dad. Is he going to take a promotion? How dare you? You know, so we moved to Ventura County where I didn't fit in. I didn't know anybody. I got cut from the sports that I tried out for, and I blamed everyone but myself. The reality is that I didn't try to fit in. I didn't want to do good in school. I wasn't going to be disciplined and do my homework or ask for help. And I loved that quick burn. A sense of approval that I had was building this belief system, right? From a young man. If you can huck yourself off the biggest jump and your friends think you're cool, man, you must be cool, so I'm okay. Fast forward a few years into high school, if you can make barnyard animals in the back of English class and people laugh, they like me, they think I'm cool, I must be cool, I'm okay. Spit wads, ditching, smoking cigarettes out in the parking lot, to introduction to marijuana, and then I had my first taste of alcohol. And I remember, it wasn't tough, it wasn't like a super cool. There was a couple guys that were older than me, and they asked me, hey, do you want to hang out on Friday night? And for some reason I knew, like, we didn't talk about drinking at all, but I just knew, like, that's what we were going to do. We were going to go out and drink on a Friday night. And so I went with these guys, and we're cruising around this little town where we moved to in Ventura County is Ojai. I didn't fit in there. I really don't still fit in there. But if you've ever been to Ojai, it's sweet. We're cruising around Ojai on a Friday night in this, like, lousy 70s hatchback Mustang contraption. And my first drink was 4 citrus wine coolers. And I know, dude. It's almost as bad as if it was like Zima. Or like White Claw or whatever it is now. I don't know. But the thing that happened, right? I get that warmness. I get that belly that starts to heat up. And like we share about, the thing that makes me bodily and mentally different from my fellows happened. And I was good, dude. With these dudes that I was, like, at best acquaintances with, all of a sudden we were road dogs. We were going to go by the school on the way back. They're coming back from homecoming. So all the cheerleaders are there. All the girls are there. And I'm like, dude, all of a sudden I was, like, had the gift of gab. I could talk. I wasn't shy. I wasn't embarrassed. I'm like, let's go. And so I made a commitment. I, like, didn't articulate it. I didn't speak it out loud. But I made a commitment in my heart. I'm going to do this as often as I possibly can, because this works. I feel good right now. I'm not angry. I'm not wrapped up in my thoughts. I was fine in the moment. And that's what alcohol and other substances did for me. They allowed me to feel, that was my solution to life. For the first time in my life, I felt comfortable in my own skin. I stopped questioning whether I had been adopted, you know, all the stuff, right? That's a real thing, man. I was like, dude, I must not be a part of this family. So as I made that commitment to that in my young teenage life, the choices that I made and the behaviors that I acted in became more and more criminal, more and more illegal. I don't know if you're laughing, but it is kind of funny. I was a wreck, and I was willing to do whatever. Like, I wasn't picky, like, oh, I'm only going to drink, you know, top shelf. Like, dude, whatever. Whatever we could steal out of Vons, I'm down with it. Whatever we could steal from somebody's parents. If you got a bag of something else, we'll try that. White out that we stole from school or some gasoline, that'll work. Let's go try that out. So I'm not a picky alcoholic. Whatever you got that'll get me out of right here, right now, works for me. So what started off as, you know, doing a beer run turned into, you know, oh, is that garage door unlocked? Let's see if we can find some keys to a car. And on it goes. And so I got introduced to treatment when I was 16. And I tried my grandma lived in Northern California. So because, as we all know, the problem is usually, it is usually geographic, right? So I moved from Ventura back to Northern California because the school system was just out to get me. And I got up to Northern California, and it turns out the school system and the sheriff's department up there really had me pinned. So I went back to Southern California, and the district attorney's office in Southern California was really out to get me there. So back to Northern California I went. It wasn't me. It was the principal. It was my old man. It was my mom. It was my little sister. It was the sheriff's, the probation. It was never me. And, you know, when we stick around here long enough, we come to find out that it's always me. Never is it not me. Even when it's not me, it's me up here and how I relate to it and my perspective of it. So 16 treatment, couple geographics, 17 treatment, couple more geographics, 18 treatment, another geographic, back to Southern California. The counselor I had when I was in that last treatment center in Northern California told me, dude, if you don't get it right, you will be in jail in less than a year. And I was flabbergasted at that. I couldn't believe the audacity to say something like that. And 3 months later, when I was sitting in the county jail, I would love to say that I remembered those words that that guy said, and I didn't even think about it. I was off to the next mission, and that began my experience with law enforcement. I was done. I had graduated from the opportunity to go in and out of treatment. I was now going to go in and out of county jail for a while. And so that's what I did. And I'd have a rough week here or there. Maybe I'd go hit a meeting or try church, want some kind of connection with something bigger than myself. But I was never willing to do the things that are required to stay here. I was not going to work a step. I was not going to get a sponsor. I would come to meetings and smoke your cigarettes and let you take me to Caro's or Denny's. I was in on that, but I wasn't going to do the stuff that actually is required to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as a result, I didn't stay. So in 1996, I went back to Northern California with a grand plan to travel the Western United States, build custom homes and ride skateboards. And I made it to Redding and got a DUI. Yeah. I mean, that's where I'm originally from, so that probably explains a lot, right? I made it back to Redding, got a DUI like the first week I was there, was going to court all summer, broke my femur a couple months later, and a few months after that, I went out with a friend of mine one night to go drink at some bars and play pool, and we... We committed a robbery that ended we committed a homicide. And a few days later, I was arrested. And a year in county jail, I was sentenced to 25 years of life in prison. And you would think, you know, that's got to be it right there. That's enough. And that's not how... Like, those consequences must be enough. And I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt that I am not a consequential, when disconnected from God and without you guys in my life, I don't think like that. I don't think consequentially. I think magically. I'm going to do this for the thousandth and one time. And it's going to magically be different. Everything that I've done up to this point is exactly the same as the 999th time. But this time, it's going to be different. And so I went to prison here in California. And I thought, I'll get plugged in. I'm going to start reading the Bible. And it's nothing wrong. Like, dude, that's great. But what I refused to do was take an honest look at myself and my thinking. And what I refused to do was to be rigorously honest with another human being about who I was. And what I refused to do was take responsibility for my life. And as a result, I experienced a small taste of what it might be like to have a spiritual relationship, but I didn't have the fullness of that. And so 6 years into my life prison sentence, I had disconnected from spirituality, from people that talked about God. I started dabbling in, you know, prison stuff, prison politics, and a buddy of mine walked by me on the yard one day and was like, "Hey, you want one of these pills?" And it just seemed like, yeah. It had been 6 years since I'd put anything into my system. And the next week, I smoked some pot. And a couple weeks after that, I bought some booze from a guy. And you know, it was a month or so after that that it just dawned on me, like, man, there's this other stuff here that makes you go real slow and just relaxed. And I think I'm going to give that a shot. And that's what I did. And I made another commitment in my life that I was going to do that as often as I possibly could, no matter who I hurt, no matter what it cost me, that's what I was going to do. And that's what I did for the next 6 years. And I did all this stuff, right? Like, you know, gangs and trafficking narcotics and covered in tattoos and just, you know, all the things, right? And I was empty and completely hollow on the inside. And I liked to pretend that I was a tough guy. But the reality is that I was manipulative and mean and scared and self-centered beyond imaginable. And I was willing to do whatever it took to get out of right here, right now. And it was in 2005, and I would have, you know, all through my life, I have always, I don't know if this is common for alcoholics, I think maybe some of us, but I always feel like there's been, like, this spiritual antenna that, like, maybe it's just life, but, like, I would get kind of bummed out and low and be like, dude, I need God, man, like, what is wrong with me, man? And I'd, like, try to go to church, but I just wouldn't feel, like, really plugged in, or I'd come to a meeting and I'd be like, these idiots don't know what they're talking about. And like they knew, you guys knew exactly what you were talking about, but I was so angry all the time. And so I had one of those weeks, one of those days, and I was talking to a good buddy of mine, Charlie, on the prison yard. We were sitting out on this bench, and I was in beautiful West Fresno County. Just a little bit away from Harris Ranch, right there off I-5. It's a gorgeous part of the state. So we're sitting out there. It's like 1:30 in the afternoon, the cool of the day. And I'm super sarcastic. I'm sorry, guys. It was very hot. It was miserable. And, you know, and I had been in prison for a decade or 9 years at that point. And I remember telling him, I knew this guy was sober. And I asked him, we're just talking. And I was like, dude, I think I want to quit. And he just stopped the conversation. He had a few years sober. I didn't really like know. Like I knew there was AA meetings in the joint, but I didn't really know a lot about it. And he just stopped me. I think I want to quit, Charlie. And he was like, look, dude, you want to talk about handball or burpees or working out, punk rock music, skateboarding, I'm in, dude. But when it comes to this, he goes, why don't you just shut your mouth? He goes, because you're not done, dude, and I don't want to hear you cry about it. And I was so deeply offended by that. Right? Like, I mean, that's how we are, right? I was seriously, how dare you? And he was right. Come to find out, he was right. I wasn't done, dude. So I spent the next year getting done. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but that's exactly what I was doing. And I came back to that to that man 10 months later, or 12 months later, in September of 2006, shattered, strung out like a research monkey, just done. And my, like, concept of, I mean, I was, like, embarrassed. I thought I was a good dude. I was not a good dude. Like a prison good dude. Like, oh, you're a good dude. I'm not a good dude. I just want to go home, dude. I just want to go home. I'm scared. I'm sick. I'm tired of this. I'm a liar. And I came back to Charlie and I was like, man, I'm done. Will you help me? And I think that's probably the first honest words that had come out of my mouth in decades. And that was September 1st, 2006. And I stayed sober for 3 weeks. And then I relapsed. And I didn't tell a soul for a week. It was 8 days. I didn't tell anyone. And I was I told myself, dude, no, in 6 months from now, no one will even know. Who cares? No one's tracking these days but you. And that, like, was that night, my cellmate was like, bro, you're coming up on 30 days. How amazing. Yep. Yep. And I don't think I slept all night. And I woke up. I talked to Billy in the morning. I was like, dude, I relapsed 8 days ago, man. I got 8 days sober. And I went to Charlie and talked to him. And I was honest with my family about where I'd been for the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years. And I thought for sure, like, the easy sell would be my mom. The hard sell would be my dad. And I told my mom first over the phone. And she was like, you what have you been doing in prison for the last 10 years? She's like, I can't. I feel like you just kicked me in the stomach. What? And I was like, dude, I thought she had been going to Al-Anon. This is not cool. And then I thought my dad was going to for sure cut me loose. And that was going to be it. But my sponsor, told me, look, whether you tell him or not, I don't know. He goes, but I have a feeling you're not going to stay sober unless you're honest. And so I told my old man. And he said, are you finished? And I said, yeah, Dad, I'm finished. And he said, look, I don't live where you live. And I don't know what that's like. But he said, you're my son, and I love you. How can I help you? And that was one of the first, my first experiences of God's grace in my life. I don't deserve that. I deserve, we're done with you. You'll get a book of stamps at Christmas later, loser. And I got the complete opposite of that. My experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we get mercy and we get grace from each other, hopefully, and through a greater power. So I threw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to a bunch of meetings. I have 10 minutes left. I want to share this. If you're new, so where I was at, we had 3 meetings a week. Sometimes H&I folks showed up, sometimes they didn't. There was a free person that would open the door, and we would just have a meeting. But they would always talk about like these fundraisers, like the dudes that were the prison dudes that were running the meetings would be like, yeah, we're going to sell hamburgers to raise money. And that was the meeting. And I was like, dude, this is not, I've been to AA meetings. This is not an AA. This sucks. And I'm trying to get sober. And so my sponsor and I went to this meeting. We went to a couple meetings and we just took all the readings of the binders and we just told them, we're the new secretaries. That's how this is going to work. And so that's not how we do it in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a group conscience. But God honors the willingness, I think. Anyhow, I threw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous for the first few years I was sober. And then I transferred to Soledad, and I was at Soledad, and there was a ton of AA there. Like Saturday, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, there was two meetings. It was like Thursday nights. Like, dude, you could hit like six meetings a week. And I was like, this is amazing. Holy smokes, dude. I can also go to a meeting a day. This is incredible. Got super involved and had a couple years where I pulled back from AA and like tried going to church more. And that didn't really do it for me. And there's nothing wrong with that. For some of our members and for some folks, that works great. And like our literature says, our hats are off to you. Go for it. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a foundation, an anchor. This is where I belong. This is what I want to be a part of. This is my family and this is my home. And through the loss of a relationship, the death of my dad in 2010 and then 2014, I threw myself back into Alcoholics Anonymous. And we met, there was a couple guys that were coming in from this, from a big book group. Just so offensive. And talk about the literature all the time. Like, dude, relax. But they would come in to this prison meeting and they would say their first and their last names. And they would quote the big book all the time. And they would talk about these conferences that they were putting on around the country, getting prepared for Detroit, right? Which we were supposed to have in 2020. The Road to Detroit, they called it. And it was like kind of like bootlegged AA. Like they were just like, dude, we're going to Gallup, New Mexico, and we're renting a hotel and we're gonna have a 3-day conference over the weekend. We're going to somewhere, Oklahoma. We're gonna be in Indiana. And I was like, dude, that is cool. Do you think we could do that in prison? And they're like, we don't know. We never heard of such a thing. We're going to talk to our sponsor, and we'll get back to you next month when we come in on the second Tuesday or whatever their volunteer night was. I was like, cool, see you next month. And I was like, I'm not waiting until next month. So we talked to our staff liaison for Alcoholics Anonymous. The staff liaison gave us a whole packet, fill this stuff out, make the proposal, all run it through the warden. These guys come back in a month, and they're like, our sponsor had never heard of such a thing. We're going to talk to the grand sponsor. And I'm like, we just got approved for a 3-day AA conference in prison. If you guys are game. And so in January of 2016, we had the first, at least there, 3-day Alcoholics Anonymous conference in a state prison. And what happened from that was a workshop, a steps workshop in the spring and a steps workshop in the fall, a big book study on a Sunday night, and Alcoholics Anonymous like caught fire at that prison. And guys were sponsoring each other. You could walk out on the yard on the weekend and see dudes doing fifth steps, like sitting over in the grass doing a fifth step. It was an amazing experience. We started a meeting on Friday nights called the Read Nothing, Share Twice. And it was great, dude. Right? Like, we would just say a prayer, go around the circle, like sift through the baloney, and then you get a second chance. All right, you already said like the planned crap that you were going to say. Now what's really going on? And It was awesome. It was awesome. And in August of 2017, I got the opportunity to go to the parole board. And by the results of the application of Alcoholics Anonymous to my life, I was found suitable for parole at my first parole hearing. And 5 months, 4 months later, December 7th, 2017, I got the opportunity to step out of prison after 21 years. And that is the direct result of the application of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to my life. And I don't know that it's like that for, it's not like that for everybody. But what is like that for everybody is a sense of freedom. I got to get free before I ever got free. I got to experience spiritual and emotional and mental freedom years before I got to experience physical freedom. And that's what we have to offer here. Purpose and freedom through the application of the steps, through service to others. I get relieved of the bondage of self, and I become a useful tool. I mean, I'm already a tool. So, like, to be useful, like, that's cool, dude. That was lame. Don't even laugh at that. That was stupid. But here's the thing, right? I walked out of prison. I was in a meeting on Wednesday night, a 12 and 12 study on Wednesday night. I got out on a Thursday morning. I was in a meeting at 5 o'clock that night in the Alano Club in Ojai. The next day, I was at the 6 a.m., and I haven't left you guys. You guys have been my community. You guys have been my group. Wherever I'm at, if I'm in Ventura, if I'm in Ojai, if I'm in Fresno, or if I'm here, you guys are my people. You guys are the mirror that show me who I really am when I don't know and I can't see it. And I get to be that for you guys, and so I have some purpose in my life. And today, like, I got out of prison. I got released off parole 4 years early. I have this amazing job. Dude, I usually don't share this. I'm going to share it. This is not bragging. It may be a little bit. But, I went to school and got a degree while I was locked up, and I thought, I'm going to be a counselor, like a case manager. Turns out, I can't stand it. And it's a lot of paperwork. But I got plugged in with the fire department. And I've been working with the state fire department for 5 years. I'm a driver, company officer. Me. Dude, like, if they knew, like, I get to go help people on their worst day. You guys taught me that. You guys have shown me how to do that. And so, like, I got to leave work this morning up in Northern California and drive down here. And what a blessing, dude. You know? I got dumped a year ago after a number of years. And that sucks. But I didn't have to go drink. I will say this, and I'm going to sit down. Thank you for the warnings. One of the things that is the highlight of my life is, right, and the book talks about us being connected to one another and us intensive work with other alcoholics, right? That will ensure immunity from drink like nothing else. When my relationship with God stinks, when I have a resentment against you guys, when I don't want to read the book, and then I get a phone call from this dude, I'm like, well, I'm going to answer it. That keeps me. When everything else fails, that will keep me. That's what the book promises. And if you want to get free, my experience has been, put yourself in a position to be of service to others. Honest with yourself, relationship with God, and service to others. And the amount of freedom that we get to experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is up to you. How free do you want to be? I am really stoked to be here. Thanks, you guys.